Oh, I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real hockey, I think I might have got, you know... I believe I might have went to the shop.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
Gage short makes a nice move, gets it to Scene, hands it in front. Score! All set. Scandella scores and hit the glove of Allen and ends up in the back of the net.
Do it along the wall. Chips it back. McCullough tried to block it, but Stewart got there. Hands it off for Jim. Score! Niederreiter!
Back to Koivu at the hash marks. Walks it down to the corner. Sends it right in front. Score! Now it comes out to Coyle. Coyle with a shot. Score! Charlie Coyle! And that is going to do it. The Minnesota Wild.
The smooth
winning one for the first time
voice
in the series.
Of
the
Dave
team that scores first did not win.
Love
terrific.
That guy. Isn't that great?
That is outstanding.
Boy, when it was 1-0, it was, here we go again. And next thing you know, Devin Dubnyk shuts the door with some absolutely, almost like he was playing knee hockey on the floor in the living room, types of saves, throwing limbs all over the place, blocker pad saves. Alexander Steen saying something along the lines of, he got a piece of it. You know, you could hear him saying workingly, quote, lucky. But lucky or not lucky, Devin Dubnyk was incredible. He was the story last night, in our opinion, of the Minnesota Wild 4-1 win over the St. Louis Blues. They take a 3-2 lead against the Blues in their best of seven series. Chad Graff on about, what, an hour and a half of sleep?
It wasn't very long. I can tell you the alarm came quick. I don't know how long it was, but all of a sudden it was going off again, and I was so tempted just to hit snooze, and oh, there goes the flight. Sorry, folks.
Flight. Yeah, that's even worse when you have no choice. So what time did you pull out a Scott trade?
Left Scott trade at 1, dropped
not
off.
Bad.
No, that was fine for, you know,
you
puck
party.
Drop at 8:45. I drove back Derek, who will have the Edmonton rider. I drove him back and Tom Powers, and we get back to the hotel. I dropped them off like, you know, the parents dropping the kids off. Have a good one, guys.
Powers.
Right, Powers and Derek. And then I leave, go to the gas station, fill up the rental car with gas, go drop off that, then have to wait for the taxi to pick me up at the rental car place, bring me back to the hotel.
So you did all the pre-trip maneuvers.
So I took one for the team this time, yeah.
And so when did you get to bed? About 2, 3?
So I got to bed around 2, 2:30. And then
were you bitter?
Up was,
were you like looking at the clock saying, I'm not sleeping?
I knew it was coming. I was just happy. If that game went to triple OT, I would. My head would be on this desk
so
right now.
So the Pittsburgh Penguins are out. That would have meant that the Sunday game would have been at 8:30 because
right.
They would have been, because they're Pittsburgh, even though they suck.
God
they
forbid
would have been,
Pittsburgh
oh,
ever
that?
Plays at 8:30.
Speaking of which, do you think Malkin's out of there now? There's some talk of that.
They need to make some huge changes. That team has gotten old fast and stale fast.
Good.
And
good.
They need to drastically change things.
You know what
things.
That means? Maybe the Eastern run block of the National Hockey League will figure out that there's hockey played west of Pennsylvania in this league that's better than that.
I wouldn't hold your breath. Don't get carried away yet.
Blue in the face, so don't
they've got
that.
The New York Rangers still and the mighty Bruins who missed the playoffs.
Yeah, the worst thing is that the Rangers, they move on and now we got to deal with that crap. I'll tell you what. So, Chad, let's get down to it. What a week. It's been a whirlwind for this hockey club. I mean, we're going to, you know, we've got the parade route. They're winning the cup. It's funny. I do have to say this market gets so happy and so sad. Like, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. They win and it's time for the cup. Well, where are we going to go with the parade? We're going to go up and down the street. They lose and it's time to, you know, fire everybody and start from scratch.
The emotions.
And this series especially,
when
you alternate wins, when and not just alternate wins, but, you know, there's been, what, no game has been decided by you know, fewer than two goals. It's all been, you know, not the first two games were close, but I mean, even then you still get some late goals, and then you, three and four are dominating games.
You know what that shows?
What does it show?
To me, it shows how fragile, really, first the Blues are, and really kind of the Minnesota Wild to a degree. It seems as though if they get confidence, look out, either one of those teams. And if something bad happens, look out. That's what I see.
It shows two things to me. One, how even these two teams are.
Sure.
And you can take that one of two ways, either as a compliment to the Wild to being even with a team that was one of the NHL's best in the regular season, or as an insult to the Wild that they weren't able to, you know, get that spot that the Blues have. I mean, the Wild are showing that they are just as good as them. And the problem and the downside, if the Wild lose this series, and if they, you know, we'll be talking tons if they lose this series about how they missed the chance in Game 6 at home and how they couldn't do it in Game 7. But above anything else, the big picture, I think, would be, why put yourself in a situation where you have to play the Central Division champs in the first round? So that'll be the storyline going over the summer. But the Wild have shown, you know, they are absolutely a top-tier team.
Well, they definitely are. And they have, no question, garnered the respect around the league. We're going to hear from Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, from his post-game, post-season press conference. Said some great things about Mike Yeo and really what it's like to not only get in the playoffs 1 year, but then, you know, where you have to go the next year. And how many teams that were in the playoffs last year that aren't in it this year? This league is not the 21-team NHL where you just show up and five teams are out. This is a very difficult grind for these teams to make it. Whether you're an eighth seed or a one seed, there's not a lot of difference between them. With Minnesota and with St. Louis, I think it really comes down to who gets the goaltending and who can keep the power plays quiet. At the end of the day, I think that's what this is coming down to.
I think it comes down to that a lot in the playoffs, but especially with this series. I mean, these two teams are so good defensively and are so well-structured. You talk to scouts around the league, and that's the first thing that they talk about in this series, how amazed they are with the gap by the defensemen, how amazed they are with how well things are, you know, just controlled throughout this. This series has produced the fewest shots on goal of any of the eight playoff series, and I think that's a testament to how good these two teams are defensively.
It's probably also produced the most blocked shots as well. I mean, those are some huge numbers that we've seen out there. Our number is 651-989-9105 if you want to join us on the Ice Radio Show with Chad Graff and yours truly, Pete Wagner, at the board, David Helmer. Let's go to Chad and Blaine. Good morning to you.
Hey, this is, Chad. It was a good win last night. I just had a couple observations. I just noticed that in the first period, we have a tendency to just kind of bat the puck and just kind of try to toss it around. Why don't we try establishing a little bit more control in our own end? Why did the D automatically just try to throw it instead of just trying to maybe hold it and letting the forward come down and get it?
I think a lot of that, Chad, has to do with the starts that the St. Louis Blues have gotten. And, you know, one thing that they do is they close on the Wild options quite effectively. So therefore, the game is a little more unsettled, and there's really, you know, you've got to just chip and chase, that kind of thing, in the early going. And that really was going on last night. And, you know, Chad, I think a goal or two starts to loosen things up for Minnesota, and then it gets cleaner.
I think they definitely, though, struggled to, I mean, they had three shots on net. That tied a franchise record for fewest shots in a playoff period. And I was talking to somebody at the intermission, a scout who was saying, how is this team not just putting more pucks on net? For as good as Jake Allen has been in some games, he's also been relatively untested in a lot of games. So I think that there was definitely, you know, an added emphasis on the shots on goal. I mean, you look at what the Wild did by period. They had three shots in the first period and three shots in the third period and win a 4-1 hockey game. That doesn't say a whole lot about the goaltender, but it also, you know, tells you that the Blues are a very good hockey team. I think that it was lost a little bit that the Blues outshot the Wild 19-3 in the third period.
If you're just a casual fan, you didn't know who Vlad Tarasenko was, you sure do now. Chad, what else do you got?
Well, it was...
My other observation would be, I know our power play scored last night, but it seems like our second power play moves the puck way faster and they get better opportunities. It seems like our first string power play they're more lethargic and they're kind of looking for the perfect play. Why not play that second string a little bit more?
I completely agree with you, Chad. And I think the big thing with that second power play unit is the defenseman. I think that Matt Dumba and Jared Spurgeon have been outstanding on the points. Frankly, in my opinion, on the points of the power play, they've been better than the combination of Ryan Suter and Jason Pominville that has been, you know, on the point of the top unit all season long. And at this point, my guess is that Yo's not willing to put Dumba and Spurgeon with the Parisi group on the top unit. But exactly, in my opinion, I know that it takes some guts to look at Parisi and Suter and Koivu and tell them that they're not going up first, but the second power play, and I know that the first unit got a power play goal last night, but let's face it, that was Mikko Koivu trying a cross-ice pass. It deflects off his skate. In my opinion, I'm with you, Chad. The second unit has been terrific, and I think that Matt Dumba has added a lot back there, and so has Jared Spurgeon, so I'm with you on that one, Chad.
You know, the other thing, too, is I think Mikael Granlund's been the key there. Chad, thanks for calling. Check in with us again. As long as the Wild are going, the show is going to be going. So it's hopefully for the On the Ice Radio Show, we're going into June. How about that? Dave, do you want a break here?
Yeah, we got a long one coming up.
Oh, not really. Really? I guess that's what happens when your show...
Make more time for our St. Louis Post-Dispatch guest.
Tom Timmerman. You know, that's what happens when your show is just rocking.
Yes.
Just that good. We have to take care of business. When we come back, Tom Timmerman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We're going to continue our Wild Blues discussion. We're going to hear from a total of 5 writers embedded in 5 series throughout the National Hockey League coming up. This is On the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Welcome back to the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105. The Ticket, all hockey, all the time here for two hours.
2 full hours.
That's about as many hours of sleep as you've got.
I like the way of looking at that. I should have used that.
You know, and you're telling that tale about dropping the boys off, or your kids, Tom Powers and
Derek Van Diest will have on at 10.
Yeah, who's joining when you're dropping them off at the hotel, gassing up the car, getting it prepared. I went straight to Clark Griswold.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the family trucker. I went straight down that road with you.
That's a good image to conjure up.
Well, there you go. But the full snore driving down the highway, too.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, although you're flying and sleeping. So anyway, we move on to the next segment here, the Wild and the Blues. It's a 3-2 series lead for Minnesota. The momentum shifts have been absolutely every other. I mean, that's a fair way to look at it. And, you know, who knows, probably the same thing happens in Minnesota. I'm done predicting on this one, Chad.
Well, here's how Tom Timmerman, who put it, who's about to join us. In the Stanley Cup playoff series between the Blues and the Wild, momentum doesn't exist. I kind of like that.
Tom Timmerman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch joins us. Good morning to you. I hope you got more sleep than Chad did last night.
I think I probably did, but I haven't been in an airplane yet, so that's later in my day. So,
good luck to you with that.
Yeah, I mean, this series has been... It's been grueling, and Chad, you have my sympathies with a potential Game 7 having to come back. And you know the way this series is going, you're going to be coming back because that's just the way it is.
It would be all too fitting, I think, for the Wild to have a chance to close it on their home ice and to not... you know, take advantage of that opportunity. But here they are, up 3-2. The Blues now, the ones who have to come and respond, facing elimination in St. Paul tomorrow afternoon. What do you think, how much pressure do you think is on the Blues to extend this series and get it back to Game 7 and not suffer a first-round exit for a third straight year?
I think the pressure is immense on these guys. I mean, they haven't gone through it quite in this way in previous years, but it always happens. I mean, you know, this year they didn't go up 2-0 like they have in the past couple. But yeah, I mean, to force this back to St. Louis and to know, I mean, they got to be saying, well, we did everything so well in Game 4. Why couldn't we do, you know? So I'm sure they think, look, we know we can do this. We know that being ahead in this series doesn't mean anything. But you know, this is a team where if they lose this game, you wonder what this team looks like next season because, you know, when this keeps happening, you think there's got to be changes. Something's got to be different on this team. So, yeah, I think everyone's going to be going to be feeling it.
From the obvious view down to the ice, I said earlier, it, really this thing comes down to the goaltenders and special teams. I think everything's been a wash from games 1 through 5 right now. From your view, do you see anything like that? And anything else you could add to that, what it really, quote, comes down to?
You know, after game 4, there was kind of a debate within the writers here, and we asked Ken Hitchcock about it too. What was the key goal in that game? Was it Reeves' first goal that got the Blues ahead, or was it the fourth goal by Stastny, which it was 3-1 and it extended the lead? I think last night you'd say, what was the key? Was it Scandella's first goal that Jake Allen doesn't catch and that allows the Wild to tie it up? Was that the pivotal point? Or was it Dubnyk's save on Steen when it could have gone to the Blues, could have taken the lead? And so yesterday, you know, for the first time really in the series, I mean, the goalies were the difference. Allen didn't make the save that could have kept the Blues ahead. For that game to be tied 1-1 after the first period, I think had to be disappointing for the Blues and encouraging for the Wild, because, you know, especially the first 10 minutes, the Blues dominated. We were saying late in the first period there, you know, the Wild were kind of buzzing around again. I think, you know, the Blues could go into the first intermission down a goal. And wouldn't that be something? Because of the way they came out to be in that situation. But then, you know, to have some of the chances that Steen had in the second period, and it wasn't they took them poorly. They were great saves by Dubnyk. Dubnyk just, you know, won that game. And I think the Blues say it can come out against him. We had chances. I mean, I had, what was it, 37 shots on goal, but they were outplayed in the net on last night. I don't even know what day of the week. It was Friday, right? It was Friday night?
I think so. I sometimes have to look back, too.
At this point, when it's the playoffs, does it matter, right? Yeah. I mean, it all kind of mushes into one. So yeah. I agree with you, Tom. We're speaking with Tom Timmerman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He's covering the St. Louis Blues and the Wild Blues series as we continue the On the Ice radio show. And one of the things that I think... It's not that I feel as though goaltenders really lose games. It's more that they win games. And, you know, we've seen a couple of questionables go in on each of these guys. It's going to happen in this game. It's going to happen in the types of opportunities that are abounding. But it's whoever can make the big save at the big time. And then also, I still think the power play, that Blues power play is just absolutely potent to me when it's going.
It is. And you know, we've seen in a lot of this series, especially in Minnesota, that the Wild haven't been in the box. So that is, you know, in some ways the best penalty kill is not having to use it. The Blues had some dynamic power plays they got going last night. But, you know, after the first goal, they didn't get anything out of it. They had that one in the third period, which kind of clinched it when Minnesota killed that one off. You know, that was their last chance to get in the game, and they didn't do it. You know, The tinkering with personnel, you know, kind of led to success in game 4, but, you know, the offense at times has, you know, has created stuff. It's just been a matter of finishing and getting past Dubnyk. And so, you know, they got that, and I, you know, it was important in game 1 that they got a goal against Dubnyk to show they could do it, and they know they can score on him. But yeah, I mean, the way he's playing, even with a power play that's been producing a lot of chances, you know, the goalie is saving them.
Each era, each team is different, obviously. I think back to the Hull & Oates era with Al MacInnis with the Rockets from the blue line and how good those teams were. And this team, to me, I mean, at least from a regular season point production perspective, as good as any of those. How much does it, I guess what I'm trying to get a gauge of, and I'm thinking of it in the term as an old North Star fan, you know, fine, they won a cup in Dallas, but from here it's just a major parched hockey market because between the two teams in Minnesota, there is no Stanley Cup. So there's a little bit of understanding, at least from here, I think. What is it like from a hockey community as far as the desire to make some noise beyond a first-round playoff series in St. Louis?
It's killing them. I mean, they just, you know, every year to go through this and to have, you know, very, very good teams that finish very, very high in the standings, that, you know, threaten to win the President's Trophy every year or the past few years, and they're there, and to not have a cup there, you know, the last of those expansion teams from the second six that still exists that doesn't have one. And it's, you know, it's 47 years of suffering for the fan base here, and it's it's killing them. And the fact that it keeps playing out the same way every year, I mean, it's just, it's rough. I mean, the guy, the loyal, and it's a very loyal fan base. I mean, it's not as deep and broad as you'd have in Minnesota, but it's, you know, there's a lot of fans here, and it's, you know, they've stuck with this through a very long time, and it's killing them. So, no, it's really hard. And the players, you know, are aware of that. The organization is aware of that. The ownership is aware of that. You can't miss it in this town, just the frustration that comes with being a Blues fan all this time.
Through the first five games of this series, we've seen a ton from Vladimir Tarasenko. He's been outstanding, 6 goals in 5 games. Alexander Steen is creating a ton. What we haven't seen a lot from is production from the two Minnesotans, TJ Oshie and David Backes, each with 1 point. I think they got those points in the Game 4 blowout. How much do the Blues need more from that Oshie and Backes line?
They definitely do, because one of the keys to this team, much like the Wild, has been their ability to roll four lines and to get production from all of them. And that hasn't happened in this one, for as great as Vladimir Tarasenko has played in this series. You know, that's become the line. That's the line that you can, okay, we'll try to shut that one down, and it's hard to do. But yeah, they do that. They do need to get more out of that line, because, you know, otherwise you get defensive matchups that are not advantageous. So yeah, that's been, you know, they were doing well at the end of the year when they had Backes, Oshie, and Steen, together. I mean, it's been an effective line all year long. It was effective in Game 4, but everybody was effective in Game 4. I mean, everybody on the team except two defensemen, you know, played a part in the goal some way or another. So yeah, if they can get that going, but they have no time now. I mean, somebody's got to score in Game 6 if this game is coming back. That's the beauty, you know, when you cover a series like this. I know after Game 6 I'm coming back home. Chad doesn't know. So coming back to St. Louis, it's like, I know I'm on a plane Monday morning. But yeah, that line's got to get going. And, you know, they had to move bodies around, and then the Paul Stastny last night, Stastny, Berglund, Yaskin line, you know, that's shown a little bit more production. But Backes and Oshie and then you look at, if they do stuff to this team, you know, move bodies around, that's a place where you start looking, because those are people that have been here so long. Those are also guys who want this as much as anybody, because they have been here so long. They know better than anybody the anxiety that this town is going through about how the Blues go in the postseason.
Well, that's what adds on to the pressure, and it's an unwritten one, and it's real. I mean, I think it's anybody who's an empathetic, feeling person, and I think most people are, gets it, especially if you're a player, you're in the organization. And I agree with you, the St. Louis Blues fans have been awesome. I've been watching them for years. I know a lot of them. I understand that. So it's one of these things that I watch from here and say, wow, that must be tough. I get it. I mean, you can't even compare it to being a Cubs fan, because they haven't been good. They haven't been, you know, I mean, very often, we'll say. One last question for you, Laterra. Is he going to be available for tomorrow's game?
You know, we don't know. The Blues will have an optional practice today at 12:30. Generally, nobody would be out on the ice other than yesterday's scratches. But we'll see if we get a look there. You know, Ken Hitchcock was saying it was 50-50 that he would go yesterday, and they were leaning toward it. So, but they obviously didn't use him. That would make you think that, you know, the numbers get a little bit better for the next game. And it being an elimination game, that they felt, if, you know, if he could help him, that they would use him. So we won't know. We may know later today, but as of right now, who knows? But I would think they would do everything they could to get him in the lineup.
Tom, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and travel safe, my friend.
I will try to do that. Thank you both. See you up there tomorrow.
Sounds good. Tom Timmerman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. When we come back, we're going to check in with a just incredible series, the Capitals and the Islanders, with Alex Pruitt from the Washington Post. This is the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Johansson's backhand block. Score! Out of the air, Yevgeny Kuznetsov. Rebound loose. Brower feed. Score! Look at Carl Alsner. Head save. Rebound. Score! Up, sends in Kuznetsov to his backhand. Score! Right in there to get the puck. Chimera pumps this one. Score! Jason Chimera!
My God, that sounded like a broken record. Did you hear that? By the way, Jay Beninati ripped off, and I'm not kidding you, he ripped off my goal call.
Did he?
Absolutely. I can guarantee you I've been doing it longer than him. He has no idea who I am. Alex Pruitt, how are you? Thanks for joining us here on the Ice Radio Show. You, of course, work with the Washington Post, and you've got a heck of a series with the Islanders and Capitals going right now.
I do. It's been extremely close, except for games 1 and 5. In 2 straight in overtime there. I would expect more of a tight affair today, this afternoon, as the Caps try and close out the series and close out Nassau Coliseum for good. I imagine the Islanders fans have absolutely no desire to see that happen in their own rink. So expect a pretty intense one today.
Very bittersweet situation there in New York. You know, you close down a building that's housed 4 Stanley Cups back in the day with Bossy, Trottier, Potvin, the whole group, and then move on to a new chapter. But I also feel as though they continue the season. But it was a 3-goal outburst in the third period, and things really started to steamroll for the Capitals. You have to have short-term memory, obviously, and you mentioned the close games with how the series has gone. But really, what was it for the Caps that opened things up in the third?
You mean last game?
Yeah.
I think they started to wear down the Islanders a little bit. I mean, they just kind of piled on goals in different ways. They had a lot of traffic around the lock. I mean, you just kind of go through. One of them happens because Kuznetsov does a really good job of batting a puck out of midair. So it's good hand-eye coordination on his part. Another one happens because of a strong forecheck, because Troy Brouwer is able to jop the puck free from block, kind of curl around the net and find Alzner, who was like the third trailing option on that play. Jason Chimera puts a couple pucks on net. One gets squeezed through Halak. Another flops to Brooks Weich, which is kind of a nice juicy rebound for him. So then it was kind of attrition, and that's something that they talked about even before the series started, that they wanted to wear the Islanders down. And I thought you saw the frustration kind of creeping into the Islanders later in the game. They had a couple game misconducts. Clutterbuck and Martin both got run in the third period. Couple just hacking away, you know, things that
what a shock.
Things that you see when teams are getting a little frustrated and the game is already out of hand. So, I mean, the Capitals made a big, big show of flushing that win. I mean, every comment they made was couched in things that they need to do better, or, you know, they can't allow the Islanders to take another 1-0 lead, which has happened 4 times in 5 games in this series. So,
wow.
I think they were pretty aware that a 5-1 win was all well and good, and you held up home ice advantage, and you have a 3-2 lead, but now you're going back into a place. And it's live. It's going to be an emotional night, I imagine, for a lot of people here because of the prospect of it shutting down. So that 5-1 win, I think, in their minds really doesn't matter anymore, and it should.
Braden Holtby, 73 games played this year. He's 41-20 on the season, 41-20-10, if you want to be down to the nuts and bolts there. Started the postseason on the shelf with an illness, now has a .945 save percentage and a 1.68 goals against average. Was not on the Vezina Trophy finalist, very well could have been. Is he in that form right now?
Yeah, he definitely is. They gave him a really light workload last game, which I think was good. Game 3, he made more saves than he had in any game during the regular season. Game 4, he faced, I think, 37 shots. I think stopped 35 of them or something around that area. Much, much less in Game 5, which I'm sure was good, just to kind of give him a nice breather but keep him engaged in the action. I'm curious to see what the best results were. My guess is he's either 4 or 5. Dubnyk obviously came in and kind of swiped that last spot, I would imagine. What he's done is almost unprecedented in Capitals franchise history in terms of 73 games played, 41 wins, 9 shutouts. In terms of the goaltenders who have won 40 games and played 70 in recent years, he's up there in terms of the best save percentage, the best goals against average, in terms of the really bad starts and some of those advanced metrics that you have. So, yeah, he's playing like they thought he could. But at the same time, the players playing in front of him have done a decent job, too. He's kept them in games, but he's not necessarily stealing games that they shouldn't be winning at this point, I don't think. They played really well in Game 4 here, getting that overtime win. That was easily the best game they played until they went and just blasted the Islanders out of their building in Game 5.
Holpe, by the way, dwarfing the great Ole the Goalie's numbers from back in the day. Chad Graff has a question for Alex Pruitt.
Alex Pruitt of the Washington Post, thanks for joining
us. Hey, Chad.
How are you?
I'm good, man.
Excellent. Well, you come into this game, a nice afternoon game. By the way, thanks for hogging all those 2 o'clock games. That must be real rough on your deadline.
Oh, yeah. I'm really struggling here. I'm really bummed that I have the opportunity to go out in New York after the game.
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers for another 8:30 start for the Wild. If only we could have another one of those. But today, you know, it could be the last one, as you mentioned, at the Coliseum. You looking forward to the end of that? Are you picking out spots in Brooklyn right now, or are you going to miss this the old place in the Long Island Marriott?
I have a lot of friends in Brooklyn, so I'm going to say for personal reasons, no. But it is a cool atmosphere. I mean, games three and four were definitely the loudest I've ever seen in a hockey game being on a beat this year. So from that respect, it's cool. I'm really curious to see what happens if the Caps win in terms of what people are going to do to the building, in the building, around the building. Once they realize, you know, this is the last time that they're going to see a professional hockey game in it for at the very least a quarter century.
I kind of wondered the same thing about Mike Russo of the Star Tribune when he was walking out of there for the last time. I kind of thought he might take a row of seats or something. Looking at the Capitals, we can't talk about the Capitals without talking about Alex Ovechkin. 2 goals, 1 assist. How have the Capitals been, you know, able to take this series lead without him producing, you know, 5 goals in 5 games or something like that?
Batting Backstrom, it's kind of been a thing by committee. Backstrom had a superhuman game in game 4. He was really excellent and obviously had the game winner there. And then last game was the first time since Ovechkin came to the Caps that none of their top 3 scorers had points, and they still won a playoff game by more than 1 goal. And before the season, or even earlier to the season, when Ovechkin didn't score, this was not a very good team historically. And they've gotten much better at picking up the slack, I think. In last game, you got secondary scoring from Carl Elsner, who has many goals in the playoffs as Sidney Crosby at this point. You got a goal from Jason Chimera and Bruce Leick, both of whom went through goal droughts of, I think, longer than 20 games during the regular season. Evgeny Kuznetsov gets the first 3 points of his playoff career, and it's all in the same game. And I think if you can get 1 or 2 of those games, a series, where you have guys coming out of the woodwork and all kind of comes in bunches. I mean, this wasn't like a 2-1 game where they squeaked it out with the secondary scoring. They threw the avalanche at the Islanders. It all kind of came crashing down to once. So, I think either they're going to need to replicate that or they're going to need to piece together. Because Boychuk and Letty have done a very good job on Ovechkin, especially on the power play. I mean, he's not being able to tee up those one-timers. They're not really in his hip pocket like other teams have been this season, where they'll just shadow him and Ovechkin will go park himself down by the crease. They're doing a good job of staying off him, far enough that the Caps think they can get the pass over, but close enough that Boychuk can kind of close that gap before Ovechkin can tee it up. I mean, I can only remember a handful of times that he's actually, you know, cranked a couple one-timers at Halak. So they've done a very good job there. But, yeah, I mean, two goals and 1 assist is modest numbers. It's numbers that Jason Chimera and Carl Elsner both have in this series. But if you can get those numbers from, like, 4 or 5 or 6 guys, then you don't really need your 1 superstar to carry the load.
There are a lot of Minnesotans on the Islanders, and one of them, Anders Lee of Edina, fought Tom Wilson. Yeah. What can you take us through the backstory of that and how that went down?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Wilson just railroaded Biznovsky in game 4, and you can debate the legality of it all you want. And the fascinating thing has been how sets of people can see the same thing and have opposite opinions about it. I mean, depending on which fan base you talk to, Tom Wilson is a great hitter and that was totally clean, or he's a dirty player who deserves to be, you know, banned from the league and go work somewhere else. So, yeah, it depends on who you talk to. But, there was a lot of, you know, kind of back and forth, I think, between the locker rooms. I think one Islander player called Wilson an idiot. Another said that, you know, it was totally defenseless, classless hit on a smaller player. Wisnowski's had some concussion issues in the past. The Caps maintained it was clean. He was assessed for charging minor. I think you could make the argument it could have been interference. But anyway, there was a lot of posturing, I think, going into game 5. And I think everyone expected the Islanders or someone on that team to step up and defend Wisnowski in a way. And that came in about 5 minutes into the game when Anders Lee just decided to drop the gloves against Wilson. Wilson said he wasn't looking to fight that early. But he had a lot of respect for Lee for stepping up and kind of answering the bell. So he did the same. So I think that's done with. You know, I'm sure Wilson might end up being public enemy number one this afternoon in Nassau. But I mean, he can handle it. He can dish out checks the best of them at this point.
Well, we'll watch for that development too. Alex, enjoy your work and your day or night out. I guess we can say day out at Brooklyn because it's going to be a great early close for you.
I'm excited.
Awesome.
It's, just a nice afternoon start.
Winner of this series ends up taking on the winner of Montreal and Ottawa. I love that thing's extending. The pressure is mounting in Montreal. That's terrific. And then also in the other series, the New York Rangers have already advanced, and they're awaiting either the St. Louis Blues, I'm sorry, either the Detroit Red Wings or the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's all mushing together into one. Alex, thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Yep, take care.
That was Alex Pruitt from the Washington Post. When we come back, Mark Lazarus, Chicago Sun-Times. Scotty Darling, the darling of Chicago, getting the start goal. What does that tell you about Crawford? All of that and more coming up on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
And a quick shot of the score right off the cross.
Wilson down the board. Ruggiero to Wilson. Turns to it. Here's Fisher.
Ooh, a little School of Rock here from the Ramones. I love it. Did you see that movie, Chad?
I did not.
You have not seen School of Rock?
We're just warming up. We could be here for hours if you want to talk about movies I haven't seen.
Okay, well, I'm right there. I never saw E.T. back in 84.
Oh, I have seen that.
Oh, I see. Have you, Dave Helmer?
Seen E.T.?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just...
Hundreds of times.
Just never connected with it. I couldn't go there. It wasn't, whatever. We could go for hours, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there you heard the montage of the Nashville Predators Chicago Blackhawks 5-2 win in Nashville, in Chicago, rather, which sets up a game six. And we bring on now from the Chicago Sun-Times, Mark Lazarus and Scott Darling, the big news, getting the start here again. Mark, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, Joel Quenneville's made it pretty clear. This is Scott Darling's series. I mean, I can't imagine if the Hawks lose today. Can you imagine putting Corey Crawford back out there in Game 7 on the road after not being played in a week and a half? It'd be crazy.
That might be throwing him into the lion's den. Go get him, right?
Yeah, he's proven and he's tested, but that's a really tough position for anyone to be in it. Unless Darling absolutely, you know, soils himself out there today, which he's given every indication he won't do, I can't imagine any scenario where Corey Crawford gets back in for a potential Game 7.
I mean, did you at any stage or any stretch of imagination see this happening? I mean, you know, we're talking about a Stanley Cup champion goaltender here. We're talking Corey Crawford. Obviously, he wasn't great to start, but now he's sitting for the series. It obviously has to make everybody look around and say, what just happened? Or did you see some signs of this coming into this?
Well, I think once you saw what happened in Game 1 where Crawford got pulled after the first period, gave up three goals that weren't all his fault. Let's make that clear. And Darling came in and he was just sensational. I mean, made 42 saves in a double overtime win. Some of them, I mean, he saved the game like nine times. Yeah, you almost had to go back to him for Game 2, but they went Crawford, and Crawford then gave up a whole bunch of goals. They lost Game 2, and he had to go with Darling. Joel Quenneville has loved Scott Darling since training camp. He's just enamored with his size. He's so big and so athletic. He's just been in love with him since training camp, where he came out of nowhere. Antti Raanta was the backup almost all year. He had the best numbers in the NHL for any goalie with more than, I think, like 13 or 14 starts. The best numbers in the entire NHL, and he got demoted for no reason just because Joel Quenneville wanted Scott Darling here.
That's the amazing thing to me, is that Scott Darling was nowhere to be seen. How much indication did you guys have that, you know, he'd be able to come in and play a series like this, and if the Blackhawks move on and the Wild move on, he would be the goaltender, presumably, that would be facing the Minnesota Wild in the second round?
Well, he really burst onto the scene at training camp, and he was very good. And he played, he had two stints in the NHL, and he was very, very good. I mean, his numbers were as good as Raanta's. So I guess it's not a huge surprise, but I mean, like you said, Corey Crawford, he should have won the Conn Smythe in 2013. He was the best player. The Wild know how good he could be in the playoffs. He basically stole that series last year. I mean, it's amazing that a guy of his caliber with his track record can get benched, but it's a what have you done for me lately league, and Crawford did not do it the first two games. You know, 9 goals in 4 periods of play.
So moving to the overall structure of play, the way these teams are playing, you know, that was really, I don't want to say coming out party for Nashville, but they're really able to get their offensive flow going. No Shea Weber, he's out of the lineup. They've got some serious injuries they're dealing with there, but they're finding a way to get it done. Do you feel like they're just on the verge of pushing themselves to the limit to get to where they are, or can they find another gear?
They're going to have to. It's a lot harder to do it in the United Center than it is at Bridgestone Arena. I do think that plays a role in it, but you got to give them credit. They're two multiple overtime games. This very easily can be 3-2 Nashville right now, or even, you know, Nashville having won the series. A bounce here, a Scott Darling toe save here. Scott Darling 6-5. Instead of 6-6, it's 3-2 Nashville right now. So it's been that close a series. This isn't necessarily the Hawks team of the last 2 years. Defensively, they're not quite as sound. They don't have that depth on the blue line. You know, Michael Rosenwald and Kimmo Tiiminen are logging minutes as opposed to like Nick Leddy and guys like that. So it's not quite as deep. It's still a very good team that is capable of winning the Stanley Cup, but they're flawed. Like every team in the West, they're flawed. That's the great thing about the West this year is there's 8 very good teams and no great ones. So it makes for these. Every series is going to be like this. You're seeing it on your side.
We're speaking with Mark Lazarus. He's from the Chicago Sun-Times, covering the Chicago Blackhawks, Nashville Predators series, who the winner of the St. Louis Blues Minnesota Wild series will be matching up. And to your point, as far as flaws and openings in the West, the only team that's looking to me like, oh boy, and I'm not saying the Ducks coming into this thing, into the playoffs, I wasn't so sure they were clicking on all cylinders, but I thought they were playing a Winnipeg team that was playing very well at the end of the year, and they looked really good in that series.
Yeah, I fully agree. They looked great in that series, and they're a team that should be a great team, but you wonder about the goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they've never done it before. I mean, there's really only 2 teams in the Western Conference that you can truly believe in, and one of them didn't even make the playoffs. The Hawks and the Kings have done this before. Nobody else has. You look at the Blues. Every year we see the same thing in the first round from the Blues. You look at the Ducks. That was a good first step, but they have to get past that second round. But there's a lot of questions around every team in the NHL right now, except for really the Blackhawks.
We were just talking with Alex Pruitt from the Washington Post, who was nice enough to rub in the fact that he's got another afternoon game to cover. You guys, 7 o'clock must feel early for you with the 8:30. I know you asked Quenneville about it recently. What were his thoughts on all these late games and all these super late starts?
I thought it was my colleague Mark Potash asked him, in your heart of hearts, what do you really think about these 8:30 starts? And Joel, like anyone else, he hates them. The players hate them. The coaches hate them. The reporters hate them. Most of the fans hate him. You know, I have a 3-year-old. I mean, when she's in a year or two, she's going to want to be watching these games. She can't watch an 8:30 start. You know, Gary Bettman was at the APSE conference in New York, and my editor was there and asked him about those starts. And Bettman, of course, because Bettman never met a question he couldn't condescend to, said, you know, we want to get up the games on TV and all the fans love it. No, all the fans don't love it. It's absurd, and it's not fair that only Central Division teams have to deal with this. If you're on the West Coast, you get 7 p.m. starts. If you're on the East Coast, you get 7 p.m. starts. If you're in the Central time zone, the hell with you.
Yeah, so why can't they start those East Coast times early? You know, so why don't they go with the 6 o'clock start, and that starts to balance the tables a little bit if they don't want to start them at 8:30. Well, it's really 8:45 is what those starts are.
Exactly. Start them all at the same. I mean, last night I was trying to stay up and watch the Blues Wild game. The night before I covered a 8:45 p.m. start in Nashville. I had to get up in the morning for an early flight. I fell asleep in the second period. I'm 35 years old. That shouldn't happen.
Well, now you know what it's like to be about 80, right?
That's ridiculous.
Wild and Blackhawks have met the last 2 years. Blackhawks have bounced them each time. Very possible we meet again. What have you seen from the Wild so far this season, and as you've been following this Blues-Wild series?
Well, I mean, the Wild are obviously very impressed. They've been the best team in hockey the last couple of months. If that winds up being the series, if both these teams hold on and it's Wild-Hawks, it's so weird because it would be 3 straight years they meet in the playoffs, and I feel no juice at all about this series. I mean, do you guys sense any rivalry on your side? You know, when the Hawks played Vancouver year after year, it was a blood feud. When they play the Blues, it's a blood feud. There's just none of that. There's none of that intensity, and this isn't the Hawks North Stars we're talking about. There doesn't seem to be any of that rivalry. Do you sense it?
Not at all. It's funny and it's amazing that way because Wild fans hate the Avalanche and hate Colorado after that series. They're growing to hate the Blues and hate the Blues fans. They already have some animosity to the Winnipeg Jets. Chicago, indifferent, whatever. And this is the team that's bounced them from the playoffs two years in a row.
I'll jump in on that. I mean, I was an original North Star Blackhawks lover of that rivalry. I don't think there's ever been anything like it. You know, Hartford and Boston could say that, Montreal, Boston, you know, those types of things. And but nothing ever really felt like that. In St. Louis, I think with this series, the Minnesota fans are trying to feel something with this Blues series, but it's not quite there. But it's not Vancouver. And actually, I do believe that there is a little bit of an edge when it comes to Wild Hawks. We just need to get a Wild Sucks chant or a Blackhawks suck chant to get this thing going.
It is something. I mean, the problem is that the Blackhawks don't generate blood feuds anymore because they don't really play that style of
no.
They don't hurt you. So I think, you know, when you look at the Kings, they played the Kings in the conference final each of the 2 years, and it's a great rivalry, but it's the mutual respect angle.
Yeah.
No one cares about mutual respect. We want to see hatred, and there's no hatred with the Wild and the Hawks, it feels like.
Well, that's what you get. Neither of those teams play that way. I mean, Wild, you know, hate the Avalanche because of Cody McLeod. They're hating the Blues because of Ott and Reeves, but there's none of that between the Wild and the Hawks.
But Calgary-Vancouver is a thing of beauty going on up there, and unfortunately, we never get to see them on NBC because, really, NBC is all about Pittsburgh and Detroit and New York. So, but that's a series that I think we're all trying to look for here, and you just can't generate that with a Nashville, which Chicago, Nashville, Minnesota, St. Louis. There's not a lot of them out there anymore.
Well, I don't want it necessarily to be Vancouver, Calgary. That's kind of the extreme on the other side. But, you know, I don't want to see 180 penalty minutes every game.
I guess I'm old school.
You want to see some real passion out there. And it's just, you know, Nashville Hawks don't have that at all for obvious reasons. But there's no excuse for there not to be any kind of juice at all in that Wild Hawks series. And there just isn't. Like, if the Hawks win this series, for me as a writer, it's way better if they play the Blues, because there's storylines everywhere. There's Barrett Jackman, there's David Backus, everybody hates everybody. There's none of that with the Wild. I'll be manufacturing my own storyline.
Well, we can't wait to see what you come up with in the plant there. That's going to be good. Hey, if this series happens, will you join us again next week or in a couple
Absolutely.
Weeks? Okay, that'd be great, Mark. All right, thanks a lot. Mark Lazarus, Lazarus from the Chicago Sun-Times. When we come back, we're going to bring on someone from the Edmonton Sun. We're going to hear from our very, very good friend, Derek Van Diest, as we'll talk about the Wild Blues series and much more. Give us a shout at 651-989-9105 if you want to talk some Wild playoff hockey on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.